Construction meets the world's most popular board game in new Monopoly Construction Edition. Amass or possibly lose great fortunes. Every space on the board is packed with both iconic construction brands and incredible infrastructure projects in this new exciting edition of Monopoly. You'll need to make smart decisions to come out on top. Have you got what it takes to succeed in the world of construction? Search Construction Monopoly to order now.
Welcome to Reconstruction, the Construction Index podcast with me, David Taylor, editor of the Construction Index magazine, and my colleague Phil Bishop, editor of our daily online news service. It's Wednesday, the 16th of September, and I should be out soaking up the last of the summer sunshine, but in fact, it's pretty foggy and dull here in Devon. What's it looking like over there on the eastern side of the country, Phil?
Well, bright white clouds. Not too bad. Not as nice yesterday, okay. But optimistic for a nice weekend in a few days' time.
What have we got to talk about today, Phil? I think the main thing I'd like to kick off with is the fact that we've published the September issue of the magazine. It's just out, so those people who receive a print copy will have that on their desks by now. And it contains, as usual in September, our regular annual review of the 100 largest contractors, the Construction Index Top 100, with some interesting conclusions and observations in there. It's a thorough breakdown of the 100 largest contractors in the UK by turnover. Generally speaking, it's largely the same list, of course. They don't change that much, but there are some changes, of course. As usual, Balfour Beatty is the biggest of the contractors, and the top 10 are fairly predictable, as usual. But did you notice anything interesting in the top 100 this year, Phil, that you'd like to comment on?
Well, these tables, I mean, obviously a lot of work goes into producing them. It's full of numbers and data. And they always attract enormous amount of interest. It's one of the best, most clicked bits of the Construction Index website when this goes up. And it continues to be pored over throughout the year. What struck me, I suppose, I pulled up just for comparative purposes. I mean, the magazine's got, they tend to be calendar 2019 results for those companies. Yes. Who have their year end in December. Some companies, of course, have their year ends in other times, like June or whatever. So some of the numbers are a little bit older. But just for comparative purposes, I pulled out the list that you produced this time 2 years ago. So broadly speaking, looking at what happened in December, what happened in 2017 versus what happened in 2019. And not that much has changed, actually. There's been no spectacular growth. The top four is still Balfour Beatty, Kier, Interserve and Morgan Sindall. Mm-hmm. Although, I beg your pardon, Morgan Sindall and Galliford Try have changed places. 2 years ago, Galliford Try was in fourth place and Morgan Sindall five. And Morgan Sindall have now climbed above Galliford Try. All sorts of things have happened since these numbers, you know, the December 19 numbers have happened, including the fact that Galliford Try is now about not much more than a third the size that it was. It sold, obviously.
That's because it got rid of its housing. Yeah.
It's got rid of its housing businesses to Bovis Homes.
Yeah.
So that's now really only about a 1 billion or so, 1,100 million pound contractor, which pushes it well outside the top 10. So that will disappear.
Yeah.
But
much has changed. The headline figures change sort of by increments, don't they? They tend, there's never a huge swing normally. But this year, I think total revenues were 75.5 billion, we calculated. And that's less than 3% more than last year. So it's an increase, and it's a welcome increase, but it's a fairly small one. Of course, as you've just pointed out, all these figures relate to the period before the coronavirus pandemic. Yes. And of course, next year will be far more interesting in many ways because, of course, it'll reflect the effects of that.
I mean, you use the traditional colour of red to indicate losses and minus numbers on the tables. There's plenty of it. And there's going to be even more, of course, when we do this exercise, or you do this exercise in 12 months' time.
Yeah, well, one of the things I think is worth pointing out this year is that, you know, turnover figures have continued to sort of ratchet up generally speaking, across the board. But unfortunately, profitability appears to have suffered. I mean, I've noticed this every month over the past year when we do our monthly sector focus, which looks at the top 20 contractors in certain specialist sectors of the industry. And we've noticed fairly consistently that although turnover figures generally have been increasing, profitability has been on the slide, and it's definitely borne out in the top 100 this year. Total pre-tax profits, I think, for the top 100 this year was 734 million, and that's actually a 38% decrease on last year. So that's a fairly significant figure, I think. 12 of the companies in the top 100 actually made a loss before tax, and profits actually fell at 46 of the firms. So that's nearly half of the firms in the top 100 actually saw their profits decline in this year. And I think that's something which we need to keep an eye on, because clearly these companies, although they're working just as hard, they're not being as productive. You know, it'll be interesting to think about what might be behind that. I don't know if you've got any theories about why profitability is falling, but I guess it's just a little bit harder to do business at the moment.
I think that a couple of big transactions this year will see the profitability, overall profitability perhaps of the group as a whole, go down next year again, because for Galliford Try selling off its housing business, its housing development is much more profitable than pure contracting. Those profits from Galliford Try are going to go. Interserve is selling off its facilities management business to Mitie and becoming a pure contractor, broadly speaking. So that's going to impact, I'd imagine, on Interserve's profitability moving forward. Not that Interserve has made a lot of profits lately.
No.
But, yeah, I think... as we focus more on pure construction, the more profitable bits will be disappearing from these tables.
Yeah.
We always have this discussion every year, don't we, David, about what we should really be including in the top 100, and who is it, you know, what is and who is a construction contractor? Because whatever you say, you can always, whatever rules you set for inclusion, you can always make exceptions. And so, for example, you don't include Bovis Homes and Barrett Developments and no. Barclay, because we regard them as developers, house builders,
rather than contractors.
And yet, a lot of the companies that we do include have got house building businesses within them. But
each company, of course, is unique. They're not all structured in the same way, and many have, as you say, different subsidiary companies and different divisions involved in certain things. I mean, some have an emphasis on civil engineering, some have an emphasis on commercial buildings, some are big into fit out and stuff like that. So they are exposed in different ways to different influences. So it's very difficult to actually compare one with the other.
We also have the difficulty to address is what is a British company? I mean, we have quite fairly. We have Balfour Beatty at the top with an 8.4 billion pound turnover for 2019, making it twice the size almost of the next largest company, Kier.
Yeah.
But when it comes to all these other familiar names in the UK construction scene, like Skanska and BAM and
Volker
Vinci,
Vessels,
these are huge companies, but we only include their UK business in this list. So it's perhaps not entirely fair, one could argue, to compare Balfour Beatty worldwide with Skanska UK.
No.
But you either just make it an international list and where do the Brits come into that, or you could argue the case that you just make it Balfour Beatty Construction Services UK, which give it only a turnover of 2.2 billion. And then Balfour Beatty slips down to number, where does it come in? It becomes our ninth biggest company.
Yeah.
It's smaller than Keller. But of course, most of Keller's work is overseas.
Exactly.
But it certainly makes it smaller than, you know, ISG and so on.
Well, there are almost as many caveats as there are companies on the top 100. So you've got to bear that in mind when you're reading the results. I think the purpose of the exercise isn't really to provide people with an in-depth analysis of each company's significance, if you like, or size or stature. per se. I think it's really just to offer a snapshot of what's going on at the top end of UK construction, and to show people how those companies that are operating in the UK are actually performing. And it's the comparisons, as you say, can be they're not absolute. They can be nuanced in various different ways. But I think that overall, because we do it the same way every year, what we get is a trend developing, and I think that's the important thing to keep your eye on, rather than to compare apples and pears. So it's interesting, as I say, the fact that none of this really reflects the effects of the pandemic means that next year will be completely different, and I think that will definitely be something to keep our eye on.
Looking at the table, who are the rising stars? Who are the companies that you think, oh, they seem to be coming through? You tend to have to look at the bottom end of the table, the middle of the table, to find the rising
stars. There are a few that have come in. There's a company called TSL, which I must admit I'm not that familiar with. They do a lot of work in the food and pharmaceuticals and I think logistics sector. They actually had an 81% increase in turnover last year, which has put them in 82nd position on the top 100 this year. That's the first time they've been listed here. Another one is Tide Construction, which is in 94th place. Again, it had a massive increase in turnover, 70% last year.
Yeah, don't Tide do a lot of build-to-rent and student accommodation kind of developments? That's what I associate them with.
Yes.
The other one that's grown, had a good year, a good 2019, is Mick George from East of England, sort of interesting mix of businesses in that group, and they've grown from to a £250 million turnover business in 2019.
It is an interesting company. I mean, it's still very regional, Mick George. I mean, if you live on in the East Midlands or East Anglia, you will know Mick George. And you don't have to be into construction to know Mick George.
Because they've got trucks all over the place doing all sorts of things, haven't they?
They do loads of stuff. They do a lot of waste removals at Skip Hire. They're very well known as a Skip Hire firm, which I think is probably how they started. They do quarrying and aggregates.
I think there's muck shifting starting.
Well, they do. Yeah, they do that. They were working on the A14 project, doing a lot
of
earth moving.
Good project for them, yeah.
And they've been developing that. They've been doing quite a lot of road jobs recently, in fact. And they've got their finger in a lot of pies. It's funny, sometimes you think that if you spread yourself too thin, then you're actually sort of wasting effort. But they have really made diversification work for them, and they've gone into all sorts of different sectors. As I say, waste is, I think, their core business, but now they're very much into earth moving and civil engineering, quarrying and aggregates as well. They supply aggregates. They're certainly a name to watch, not just in East Anglia. I'm sure they'll start to be seen in other parts of the world. Although I think when I spoke to them a couple of years ago, asked them if they had any plans to expand geographically, they were quite happy staying where they were and sort of strengthening their position locally. But I think that they'll inevitably want to expand into different parts of the country eventually.
Another big grower last year was Winvic Group, who grew about 30% to £628 million.
Yes.
Their year end is January 2019, so that's really a 2018 number.
I
suspect when we get their results in due course that their 2019 will have grown again, because Winvic, of course, have surfed the wave of big sheds, distribution centres and logistics, which has been, as we talked about this before, as the high street has been slowly dying, these huge, great Amazon-style warehouses, distribution centres for internet order fulfilment have been sprouting up all over the country on these industrial parks. Have been big involved in that.
They have. And the funny thing is, I always think of, big sheds, out-of-town sheds, as being a rather sort of unsophisticated part of the construction industry, that, it's fairly simple stuff. They tend to be big rectangular boxes built on greenfield sites, and there's not an awful lot to it. But Winvic are increasingly, I notice, involved with sort of cutting edge technology. They've got a Center for Advanced Construction Technology. I can't remember if that's the exact title, but they are really pushing the boundary in terms of things like BIM and that kind of thing. And in fact, I heard from them only this week with plans to introduce, they're working with, I think it's Loughborough University and a technology firm to develop a new site safety system. And I don't know much about it. I mean, I literally got the email this week and I haven't looked into it in any depth, but they're looking to develop a new site safety system which would preempt safety problems, health and safety problems on site, and that would be worth watching. So we'll be taking a look at that later on in the year and see how they, what they're up to there. But that's an interesting company, and I think they've got some interesting stories to tell. I'm just trying to think who else is up and coming. ISG, which of course isn't a newcomer at all, but they're doing pretty well. They actually increased their, well, a lot of companies have actually laid off people, not just during the coronavirus lockdown, which of course a lot of people have done. But last year, when people were trimming back their staffing levels, ISG actually grew their workforce by 10%. And they're now the second largest privately owned contractor in the UK. And according to the Sunday Times, one of the 25 best companies to work for in the UK. So that's an interesting outfit as well.
They're slightly more opaque, ISG, since they went private a couple of years ago,
yes,
didn't they? And
yeah,
therefore we don't get quite the same depth. And why should a private company tell busybodies like you and I their private business? That's fair enough. But it's much easier to have a handle on the likes of Balfour Beatty and Keir and Morgan Sindall, where they are obliged, bound by city reporting,
yes,
rules and
to
so
bear
on.
All.
And same goes actually for Interserve. Used to be a lot easier to know what was going on. Now they're private, owned by banks.
That's right.
It's
yeah,
it's harder to know what's really behind the numbers and the detail going on there.
Following on from the top 100 are more recent, of course, because companies have been publishing their half-yearly results, haven't they?
And yes, well,
they're not particularly good in many cases.
We've had several of the big companies have announced in recent weeks their half-yearly results for the 6 months to June. And just this morning, we've had Galliford Tries, their financial year end is at the end of June. And so we've got the Galliford Tries latest full year figures, which...
This is without their house building...
without exactly that.
Interest, yeah.
So, such is the way of these things. Within a week or two of all your research and putting this magazine to bed with all these numbers...
It's already out of date.
Moving target. That one particular line, I think everything else is pretty much the same, but I don't think...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Although we've got Keir coming out tomorrow, so Keir's numbers tomorrow, well, that will... You know, if you want to get a pen, folks, and just write in the new numbers, or a bit of tip,
yes,
in the pen, write in the new numbers for Keir tomorrow and Galliford Try today. You can update yourself the,
yeah,
TCI top 100 pages of the latest issue of the magazine. But what we've found out of interest in recent weeks, the half-year results, is inter alia is Costain is still a bit of a sorry story.
Yeah.
We had Costain last year, full year results was a 6.6 million loss before tax. In the first half of 2020, they followed this up with a pre-tax loss of 92.3 million.
Yeah, it's quite a lot.
Even at an operating level, it's 90.4 million. And on half year revenue of something shy of 550 million.
And that's mostly due to two jobs that went a bit
haywire. I mean, obviously, COVID's been bad news for everyone in the first 6 months of 2020 financially, or almost everyone, apart from face mask manufacturers. But for Costain, it wasn't so much that as historic projects. One they're still building, and one they've got away from. There was a problem National Grid contract to build gas turbine compressors in Peterborough and Huntingdon. They've booked a £49 million loss on that job, which they're no longer doing. And they're still building this A465 Heads of the Valley road job in Wales, which has got lots of retaining walls and soil nailing and tricky stuff.
I think it's a really difficult job from the technical point of view, and I think they were just caught out by unforeseen circumstances, weren't they?
Exactly that, ground problems. And that's a £45 million loss on that job they've taken in for the past 6 months. But they're still in legal arguments over that. I can't remember the first, is it adjudication and arbitration? Is it that way around? Or, no, arbitration and then adjudication. But the first one went in their favour and the second one went against them. So it sounds like they're now going to have to carry the can for the design aspects of the all these retaining walls that kilometres and kilometres of the stuff where there've been problems. So it may well be that once that, you know, they clear the decks on that and they can start again, and an underlying business might be quite happy. But those are messy red numbers for Costain. By contrast, half year results. Hang on, who is that? Someone else made a loss. No, Balfour Beatty have made a half year loss, not as bad as Costain. They've made a £24 million pre-tax loss in the first 6 months of the year. Operating level, £16 million loss.
Yeah.
And I think this is largely a lot of that seems to be attributed to COVID. But not everyone's losing money. NMCN, North Midland Construction, as was, somewhat smaller company, but they've maintained their revenue pretty much. 181 million was 184 this time last year, and they've still made a small profit of just under £1 million. More spectacularly, the company which seems to be, and one of the Sunday papers I think it was, had a little piece saying, you know, one to watch in their buy tipping or whatever, is Morgan Sindall. I mean, their profits collapsed inevitably, 62%, but they still made £13 million profit for the first half of 2020. And revenue was only down 4%, still making 1,300 and something million, 1,363 million. So Morgan Sindall, yes, profits are down, revenue down a little bit, but still making money in a way that Costain and Balfour Beatty aren't.
I noticed PC Harrington, which is also, I think that's in the top 100 this year. They made a loss, didn't they, for the first half? Oh no, that was for last year, fiscal 2019. Not a big loss. I mean, 3.36 million. That's not big.
Well, Harrington, of course, not the company it was. It went through a big restructuring, went under, came back, and it's. I think it's a slightly different PC Harrington these days.
Yeah,
might be a company worth getting under the skin of sometime and having a look, see how they're bouncing back. But this morning's big story. Full year loss for the year to 30th of June 2020. Galliford Try made a pre-tax loss of 34.6 million on revenue down 20%. This is excluding the house building, stripping out the house building stuff, which they're not counting anymore because that's now Bovis's.
Yes.
Revenue is down 20% to 1,100 million-ish. So obviously it's a Galliford Try, 1,100 million turnover building company, contracting company now.
Yeah.
So that wasn't particularly good news for Galliford Try. But again, different company. Maybe, you know, maybe the decks are now clean, ready to start again.
Yes.
With a, you know, new year now started.
Hmm.
Keir's numbers come out tomorrow for the full year to June, as I mentioned. They lost 41 million before tax in the first half, i.e. the 6 months from July to December 2019.
Yes.
So that's the first half of their financial 2020 year. And that was even before COVID. So having had a loss-making first half and then the impact of COVID in the last 6 months, the second half of their financial year,
I can't
imagine Keir's numbers will be hugely pretty reading. And, well, there's not much point in talking about this. Most people who are listening to this may already have seen Keir's numbers, so you'll know before we will, folks. You know. But there may be some good news hiding in the detail, perhaps.
Yeah.
But Keir's an interesting one in many ways, because it brought in this chap, Andrew Davis, a year and a half ago, who was as chief executive. And he was the guy, he worked for Waits, the senior executive at Waits, and he'd been earmarked to take over at Carillion. He was all set to start work at Carillion and save the company, this sort of sensible, grown-up, experienced construction executive who's going to save Carillion, turn it around. But before he even started work, Carillion had gone into liquidation, and his son, I think, had rather longer gardening leave than I anticipated. And it seemed inevitable the next company in an element of crisis would turn to him as the first top man available to save the day. And so he came in at IKEA in April 29. IKEA's share price was, it had declined over the year before he came from £10 a share to about £3.50 a share. So IKEA had lost two thirds of its value and it needed someone to save the day. He came in.
When did he come in?
April 2019.
Right, April.
And so he inherited a share price that had tumbled from £10 to £3.50. Yesterday, Keir's share price closed around 52p. So he's had a pretty torrid 18 months, if you're judging just by share price, which is not necessarily the fairest way to judge a company, but it's a very simple metric to look at. And that's quite a collapse in the value of Keir as a business over the past the past year. I mean, an awful lot of surgery is going on, and I dare say there'll be progress announced in their announcement, which we've not heard yet, but it's out on Thursday morning.
Yeah. They said they want to try and save £100 million. They've sort of announced plans for £100 million worth of savings in the year up to June 2021, haven't they? So I don't know. I don't know how they're going to do that, but presumably it'll be job losses apart from anything else.
There'll be a lot of that, but it's a £4.5 billion business, so finding £100 million shouldn't be that tricky. That's a little bit of surgery. It's no butchery involved there. But there have been some other big share price losers in the past year, of course. Costain, who we've mentioned, with all those two big problem jobs,
yes,
and their losses that they've been making. Their share price, if we go back 3 years, was around £4.50, similar to about mid 2018, and then by 2019 it was down to about £1.50, £1.40 a year or so ago, and now it's down two thirds again. It's now below 50p, down below 45p, Costain share price. So something that used to be around £4.50 just 2 or 3 years ago is now 45p, so it's a tenth of what it was. So they're a company which is not particularly a favourite of the city, it looks like. Whereas Morgan Sindall, by contrast, as I said, seem to be looked on very nicely by institutional investors. They've been steady at around the sort of £12-14 mark, their share price, for the past 3 years. Now, I must stress, anyone who knows anything about shares will know that it doesn't really matter whether your share price is £100 or 100 pence. What matters is the movement in it, because it depends how many shares there are in circulation. If you've got a billion shares which are worth £1, you've got a much bigger company than having a £100 share and only five of them, obviously. So we're not talking about the overall capital value, but the fact that Morgan Sindall has stayed nicely steady at around £12-14 for the past 3 years. In fact, in February before COVID, Morgan Sindall peaked at nearly £20. A little early years after Boris Johnson came in and said he was going to spend on construction, quite a lot of construction shares had a little rise in February, only to collapse in COVID lockdown. But Morgan Sindall's nice and steady. Balfour Beatty pretty steady as well over the past 5 years. £2.50 mark, 50p either side, currently around £2.30. So Balfour Beatty and Morgan Sindall are pretty steady. Galliford Try, we were talking about a moment ago, that had been okay. £2, £2.50 3 years ago, and it sort of slid to £1.50 in 2018. Again, it hit a pre-COVID peak in February of £1.90, but it's now down to around 80-90p at the moment. Hit a five-year low earlier this month, 84p. So Galliford Try is another one that's shrunk somewhat, but I was about to start making speculation and conjecture. I should say, folks, I have no shares in any construction companies directly, but I do have ISAs and pension things which funds, I'm sure, have got bits of construction companies, but I've no idea which bits of which construction companies my various top 100 whatever fund managing things have got bits of, so I am mentioning all these companies from a complete stand of neutrality and independence.
Going back to the impact of COVID-19, which of course we have yet to see in its full glory, well, one of the things which we noted in the top 100 was, of course, that the fact that insolvencies, for example, actually decreased in the early stages of the lockdown because of the
Well, cash flow dried up, I guess.
Cash flow dried up. There was the furlough scheme, of course, and so companies were sort of kept afloat. But I think when the furlough scheme ends next month, we'll start to see the effects of this, because, of course, the full impact will start to descend on a lot of these companies. And I know that the specialist contractors, it appears, have been the worst affected. They're the ones who seem to have suffered most in recent months. Getting paid, I think, is going to be a bit of a problem. And I know the Specialist Engineering... Is it the Specialist Engineering Council, the SEC?
Special Engineering Contractors Council.
Contractors, yes.
National Council of Special Engineering Contractors.
Yeah. They are certainly bracing themselves for a return to disputes. They're expecting a lot of unpaid bills and a lot of activity in the technology and construction courts. So, yeah, we might see some pain in that particular sector in the next few months.
Well, there've been a lot of press comments, but more than speculation. A lot of companies themselves have announced job losses, which are starting to happen. And I think we're talking blithely about all these numbers going up and down. But of course, at the end of the day, what we're talking about is people being able to put food on the table of their families or not.
Yes, exactly.
Whether they've got a job or not.
Yeah. Shall we move on to our final topic today?
Right, enough bloody money, yeah?
enough. A story which you've recently been looking at, which I found very interesting, partly because I was completely unaware that it was a story until very recently, is about nitrate pollution in the Solent. And this is something which if I had seen it in the news, I wouldn't have thought it really had much to do with construction. But it has, hasn't it?
For those whose geography is not as good as it should, the Solent is a stretch of water between Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. So we're talking about the off the coast of... it doesn't seem to be Isle of Wight causing the damage. It seems to be the development and agriculture in the south of Hampshire. Natural England last year raised the alarm about the amount of nitrates leaking into the Solent. Nitrate pollution comes from various sources, but particularly farming. And when house building goes on in these areas as well, it adds to the pressure for the wastewater being generated and nitrates flowing into the Solent. And you see pictures of the banks of the Solent or the seashore there, all going through green algae. There was a word, I can't remember, eucordia or some biological chemical term for the bad stuff that it creates. Anyway, so what the Hampshire County Council put in place, I think it's Natural England dictated it, but there was a moratorium on planning permission in the south of Hampshire last year, so nothing could happen. And the first I knew about this was a press release from Morgan Sindall on back end of July that they'd managed to break the deadlock by coming up with a way of preventing any extra nitrate pollution from one of their developments. Morgan Sindall Later Living are building an extra care scheme, a retirement complex, I guess it is, when they talk about extra care, in Gosport. And they'd come up with a way of preventing any pollution or excess water flowing into the Solent and be able to get planning permission that way. And then there was a next development which came along just in the past week. It's actually an idea that the Wildlife Trust came up with, to quite a simple one: take lower ground agricultural land out of intensive production and create new natural habitats to absorb pollution. The idea that new meadows and woodlands and wetlands will prevent the nitrates reaching the Solent.
I found this a bit puzzling, because I'm aware, of course, that intensive agriculture, I mean, you know, people use, farmers use nitrates as fertilizers, and so, you know, if you're growing lots of crops and you want them to grow quickly, you blitz them with the nitrates. And I can understand that if you've got a lot of runoff from your fields, and that's going to go into the watercourses, and then you get these algal blooms, and it destroys habitats, and I think, you know, fish, crustaceans, birds, they're all affected. But what I hadn't expected was that housing developments were a contributor to this. Certainly not to the extent that I think five councils actually declared a moratorium on planning for new housing developments. And it's something like, I think that I saw on the BBC, an environmental restriction on house building has so far delayed more than 10,000 new homes in south of Hampshire. And that's quite... That's quite something.
That is. But it's not. I think what it is that the runoff from the farms, it may well be that the natural environment around it can cope with it. But once you've got runoff from housing development as well, it's the compounding measure, the straw breaking the camel's back, if it were. And so what the government have now come up with this idea of is they're calling it a nitrates trading scheme. I don't entirely know how it works, but basically saying to developers, You can give extra money to create new woodlands and wetlands. I mean, the first one, the pilot scheme, is a new nature reserve that's opened at a place called Warblington Farm, 60 hectares of woodlands and wetlands, which is being funded through the credits that housing developers will purchase. So basically, housing developers will pay for this woodland and wetland to remove the nitrates and prevent them running into the Solent. That's the idea, and they're going to, you know, see how it goes, and they're looking to roll out the scheme and get it all going. Now, it seems to me that, on the one hand, if you're only moving pollution from one place to another, but I'm not an expert on this, but I know a man who is, which is Tony Juniper, who's the chair of Natural England. I now remember him as a top Friends of the Earth guy, and he's also a Green Party parliamentary candidate. So his green credentials are pretty rock solid. And this has absolutely got his approval. He says the scheme will help nature's natural recovery and also enable new housing to be built around the Solent. So he says it is a solution by building more wetland and woodlands for the nitrate runoff to go instead of going to the Solent, I guess.
This new plan, which DEFRA's announced, a £3.9 million fund for this nitrate trading thing, did that replace a plan? Because I know there was, I think last year maybe, there was an outfit called Partnership for South Hampshire, which I understood, and I wasn't aware of it at the time. This is only subsequently when I've looked into it. I read that they were looking to actually buy land. Now, I understood that they were trying to buy plots of land which had been earmarked for development, and that they wanted to buy this. They were trying to raise the money to buy this land and then turn it into a wetland or a woodland or something like that instead of building houses on it. Now, was that a separate scheme, or is this how the DEFRA fund has emerged?
I have no idea, but it sounds. I would guess that it might be similar, since this Warblington Farm Nature Reserve has now actually opened, and it may well have been what you were hearing about was plans to open it.
It was going to be housing.
The front end of it. I don't know if it was ever was going to be housing on that particular site.
Well, that raises the question, you know, if that number of houses, you know, if a certain number of houses are required in a certain area in order to avoid, you know, a housing shortage, if they're not going to build them on these sites which are now going to be earmarked for development as a wetland or a woodland, they've got to find somewhere else, haven't they? Either that, or that the local people in Gosport or wherever it is are going to have to go without their new homes.
Unless Warblington Farm is 100 hectares and 40 hectares are going to housing and 60 are going to woodland and wetland. I don't
Indeed.
Know. The whole point of doing this is so that house building can go ahead.
Yes.
I mean, yes, it's to save the Solent, but Ministry of Housing is on board with this as well, and it's all about getting, you know, it's all part of the Build Back Beautiful, Build Back Green, or...
Oh, yes, I'd forgotten about that.
We're talking about. So this is all part of this. But more interesting, more widely, I mean, they call it nitrate trading. It's all part of this thing where, I mean, you've been able to do it, water companies have been allowed to, you know, pay money to pollute for a while, but it's the same as the carbon offsetting. Yeah, you can pollute, but if you're going to pollute, plant a tree or give us some money. And it'd be better to reduce the pollution at source, it seems to me, as far as possible. But that's not always compatible with modern living and modern methods, I suppose.
I mean, Morgan Sindall's solution seems a remarkably simple one. They're fitting flow regulators to the taps, or am I oversimplifying that? I think they said that it's allowed them to save 3,000 litres of water a day through the installation of flow regulators, which, I mean, that's great because, you know, we waste too much water anyway. We know that. But that does sound like a simple solution if that works.
It does. But maybe no simple solutions are normally the best solutions, but it makes me wonder how no one's come up with that in the past year already, yeah, while these 10,000 houses are not being built. Is that us done for another week, David?
Well, I think it probably is, yes. I'm on the edge of my seat waiting for Keir's results tomorrow, so that'll give us something to talk about, at least in passing, next week, I think.
Well, I think we'll also talk about other features in the September issue of Construction Index magazine.
Yes, yes, we should do that.
While the entire issue of the magazine is out in print and on doorsteps, it is not yet fully online. We like to give our paying readers first dibs at it before it goes out for free online, but we have got the top 100 on the website, folks, the 2020 rankings with all the latest numbers of the top 100 construction contractors. You can find that if you go to the data news tab on the top of the Construction Index website, and if you pull down the data news tab, you've got top 100 construction companies comes up, not just 2020, but every year since we started this in 2009. So we've got a good archive of annual top 100s there, freely available, that you can scroll through and pore over and spend time with. But for this week, it's goodbye from David and I at Reconstruction. Thank you for listening. See you again.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Reconstruction, the podcast from the Construction Index. To keep up to date with the latest construction news every day, visit theconstructionindex.co.uk.